Hi Helena, good morning.
Hi, Theo. How are you?
Wonderful. And I really enjoy that we are talking about this whole project of planting paradise and use Paradise Planter now in the Planting Paradise website with a new space to put your stuff together. And you've been asking me a series of questions about things I wanted to know more about, and tell me more.
Yeah, because you have all these fantastic theories are so important today. And what I understand, one of the most important points is that we all have a freedom of choice, even if we not really realize it, and how important this is. And I would really like today that you talk about this point.
Great. Yeah, it oh yes, let's
Let's.
it is such a fantastic topic in that it is so hidden in plain view. People are telling each other that they do not have choices. People try to take away people's choices. People try to impose their choices of on others. And for what I see, at this planet is paradise, if only people realize that they are creators in creation. And for me, basically, it started when I was a child, and my parents were listening to the news, and I heard stories about war upon war upon war, and I just didn't understand what was going on. And so I have sort of looked at it. At some point, one of my friends said, "Well, but then, of course, you're not even from this planet. You're just an observer." And at first, I thought that, well, I don't know what he's talking about. But in a way, I could identify with that kind of position. It is really much better to look at it than to be part of it. And so I started looking at all these people making wars and basically pestering each other and being a nuisance to each other and themselves. And the realization that it is so simple to have paradise on Earth if only people realize that they are creators in creation. And I came down to four principles. And these are the four principles. First of all, everything alive has freedom of choice. The second principle is that everybody must respect freedom of choice of every other living being. The third is that when you use freedom of choice, you must be aware that that will create changes in the universe. So there will be a sequence of consequences. I like that little rhyme in there. And out of that, you will have to know that you will need to live with those consequences. So I call that response ability. That's not responsibility as if you have to acknowledge to somebody else that what you do is right, that this is something that happens in a slave state. But response ability is that as a creator, you're able to respect the reality that comes out of what you created. And the fourth element, next to the first one, freedom of choice, the second one, respect, the third one, responsibility, the fourth one is reliability. That when you interact with the environment, it's not just that you have a responsibility for what happens to the outside world, but also a reliability that whatever you do makes sense with respect to everything else that you do. At the moment, I'm working on telling the story of freedom of choice in Dutch. One of my friends who actually he died and had to kickstart his own body again. It's quite a funny story because he, as a child, fell out of trees and he learned that he could go in and out of his body. People talk about it, science still doesn't want to know because, of course, science, objective science, looks at scientific objects. They look at things from outside and they're quite careful not to address what happens on the inside. Which is also how I came to discover freedom of choice. When you look inside, you see that everything is totally the opposite. On the outside, you have this material reality, but on the inside, you actually have freedom of choice. So, this friend, realize that for himself, that inside he could go in and out of his body. And even though science says that that's not the case, it's just because science doesn't look there. So they basically should shut up and say, well, we don't know about this, so we'll just be silent. For me, when I started to look inside the body, I realized that I could see where freedom of choice is. And so I'm now telling this friend the whole story bit by bit. And let me just summarize what I'm working on with him and what I am explaining to him.
Wow. Yeah.
So first of all, what I'm working on with him is the creation of a book, at this moment still in Dutch, because his Dutch is his main language. And as we are now, I started a website, or rather a handbook, a tutorial in a Dutch website called integralhealthcare.nl. Integralegeneeskunst.nl. There is an English version of that called integralhealthcare.info, but I haven't set it up yet so that it will translate from the one to the other. So it's just in the Dutch language as yet. So okay. It has a series of chapters, and I am unfolding those, but I needed focus. I know how it works because I worked out how it works a long time ago, but it is not easy to tell it to others. So I'm now telling it to him, which really makes it a lot simpler to communicate it. But as a result, I can now also much better tell the story to you. So what I am doing with him is creating a book by creating a series of recordings so that people can follow in on that and come to understand what freedom of choice is.
Okay.
And so the content of freedom of choice is rather simple. Let me start with the principle and how I came to it, so that I can later go into how I am telling the story to him by simply summarizing what I've told him to you. The starting point for my discovery was when I was in engineering school, and I realized that there are all these kind of equations by which reality are described. There are so-called differential equations, which are used to describe how things move and change. There are integral and differential equations to see how things connect or disconnect. But what I did not find was an equation by which I could see what we do not know. Which is quite funny, because there are actually scientists who say that there are things which are unscientific. And they use that when somebody else comes up with something which can be measured or experienced, but which does not tie in with what science has described. As a result of which, I call those people the fundamentalists, because like fundamentalism in religions, they take a scripture as the handbook of reality and forget that people wrote that book. And so in science, you can see that science is about discovering the unknown while recording what has been learned and what has become known. So you can never say that something is unscientific. You can only say we are still working on that.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I was working on that when I was in science, realizing that there are lots of descriptions of science, but I couldn't see what science could not see. So at that time, they said, well, if you want to deal with the unknown, you take one of the equations which we have for what we know, you sort of tweak the equations, change them a bit, and then you can see the unknown. So that was a bit like telling me, okay, we have this remote control in hand. You push the buttons and see if you can go to a channel which you haven't seen before. Well, that is not how it works. So at some point I realized I had to go about this differently. At that time I was doing some yoga technique, and I can really recommend that to people. At some point I looked up above my desk and I basically look into the rift of reality.
Wow.
And I understood how the universe was created.
Wow.
So for me that was a bit like, I can only describe it as there is something, a point turning inside out.
Mm.
Which is the whole universe, and which forms the whole universe.
Hmm.
So at that point I had a problem because I was studying engineering in engineering school, and they were telling me it's like this, it's like that. While at the same time I realized that the universe is based on one simple principle of a point turning inside out on itself.
Hmm.
So while I was listening to their stories and getting my degree, I was also working on my discovery and trying to understand that. So I realized that what I found was something very simple, something turning inside out. Later I discovered that that was what the alchemists are describing when they talk about earth, water, air and fire. Basically they're talking about solid going, liquid going to air, going to plasma.
Mm.
Which is basically how materials become molecular, become atomic and turn into information.
Hmm.
I didn't know that at that time. I had to work that out. I only realized that I had found something like a zipper of the universe, which connects everything to everything else.
Oh.
And of which I later discovered that that is also the base of freedom of choice. I didn't know that at that time. So I was just seeing that, okay, I found something and it pertains to everything in physics. But then I had to find what is the cause of this, what is the basis of it. So I looked in mathematics and I saw the same principle there. And I realized, well, then it's not in mathematics, but in our use of descriptions. So I turned to language, semantics, semiotics, and I realized that, no, that's where we already see the same pattern of connection and disconnection. Basically, it's the fourfold principle of yes, no, maybe, and I don't know. That you have something, you have something else. You see that they are connected, but you see that there also might be something else.
Mm.
So, let's say two points in an environment and an interaction between those two points would be one way of saying it.
Mm.
So that is what you do see and what you do describe in languages. But then I realized that I could find that in every language, also say non-verbal languages like music, they do it, they don't describe it, but they make it possible to experience it in a way, which later led to my exploration of mathemusics, of how the cell communication is the basis of our understanding and consciousness. But at that time, I wasn't that far yet. So I realized, okay, there is something in language which has that same principle of everything turning inside out and creating the connectedness between everything.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe then it's in the psychology. But I saw that in psychology, I found the same principle. The four archetypes of Jung are an example of that. In the same way I had found those four principles in language, I had found those four same principles in mathematics, I had found those same four principles in physics. So if it is in all of our descriptions, then it must be by our describing it that that happens. So I must look for it not in the psyche but in the brain.
Hmm.
So I looked into the brain and later on went to study medicine to look into that more closely. And I realized that in the brain we have exactly the same. We have the forebrain, the left brain, the right brain and the hind brain. The point on the front, the line at the left, the plane on the right and the volume at the rear. So basically it is the same principle yet again. You also see that in the sensory cell, the neuron, the brain plexus and the brain. Again, a point, a line, a plane, and a volume. You can see it in relation between the cell, the first cell, the zygote, the organ, the body, and humanity. Again, essentially the point, the line, the plane, the volume. And my whole medical studies showed me that our whole body works like that already. So at that point, I realized I have to put my engineering studies and my medical studies together. I must look at the body as the container of freedom of choice. So I looked at at microbes, plants, animals, and conscious life forms, or self-conscious life forms, and realized that it was the same principle. So as a result, I brought all of that together in a much more compact understanding, which is basically what I'm telling to my friend now, which I can, as a consequence, summarize for you too. Let me just recapitulate what I've just said. So I realize that in the universe, everything is connected to everything else by turning inside out movement. For that turning inside out movement, I formulated a logic of basically yes, no, maybe, and I don't know. Then I saw that everything in science is based on that, and everything in the body is based on that. So at some point I came to realize that, okay, this turning inside out movement is actually working within us, and so that is the basis of freedom of choice. So the starting point of the understanding of freedom of choice is essentially that of what's called the philosopher's stone.
Yeah.
If you have a stone and you park it somewhere, then you can come back 2,000 years later, for example, on the Acropolis, and you can find that it's still there. If you put anything alive anywhere, you will find that when you come back, it is either gone or it has fallen apart. You find a skeleton. So in the stone, you do not see something which you do see in the living body. And of course, that transition between the stone and the living being is what you can see when somebody has just died. Basically, the stone, the material, is still there, but that what operates the stone, the consciousness, is no longer there. In other words, if you look at the human as a kind of computer, the hardware remains, but the software is gone. Which means that the software is more important than the hardware in life. And you don't have to look for DNA as the basis of life, but it's rather the other way around, as has been shown by Bruce Lipton. As a result of life, we have life experiences which we add to DNA by a simple interplay of four proteins, which he described quite neatly, which others have described as well. Basically, there is a sensor protein, which is like the antenna or like our sensory system. There is a portal protein, which opens a hole in the membrane of the cell so that things can go in and out.
Wow.
Which is basically like the mouth and anus of our system, the metabolic system. There is also a linking process, linking protein, which connects what's happened in the antenna, the sensory protein, and what happens in that mouth, the portal protein. So basically that's the equivalent of our brain and our cognitive capacities. And that linking protein is connected to the DNA mantle protein, which sits on top of the DNA and basically is like a little memory archive scribe, like a little historian, and that historian adds anything that is new to the DNA. So it's our memory system. So that again are those four principles of yes, no, maybe, and I don't know in a different form. So you can see that the yes, no, maybe, don't know are operative as the relationship between the sensory protein, the portal protein, the linking protein, and the DNA mantle protein. Basically, it turns information from the outside to a physical record on the inside. And at the moment, I am having wonderful conversations with the creator of Tetrionics, Kelvin Abraham, who's now explaining to me what he found, and essentially he found the same. Where in my approach it would be the relation between a point, a line, a triangle, and a tetrahedron. He basically starts with the triangle, shows how that forms a tetrahedron and how that forms reality. Plastic. For me, the point, the line, the plane, and the tetrahedron are representations for respectively information as the point, energy as the line, as a difference, time as the triangle or a time cycle, a time loop, a time base, and space structure, coherence for the tetrahedron.
Okay, yeah.
And so in that way I have space, time, energy and consciousness connected in the model of the tetrahedron, the triangle, the line and the dot. Or in other words, it is the difference between three dimensions, two dimensions, one dimension and the zero dimension. But the equivalent of space, time, energy and consciousness we would call in our body anatomy, then physiology, then the regulatory system, the neurocrine, neural and hormonal system, and finally the psychology or the consciousness system, the information integration system. So I had already found that, and I realized that that is what's happening in freedom of choice, and that freedom of choice is essentially that in our body there is this direct integration between information and matter. And the material side of it is wonderfully described in tetrionics, much better than I've seen anywhere else as yet. Because basically he says, okay, if you start with a Planck quantum, and for him it starts with a little triangle. So basically he's already two steps further down the road from where I start. Then he says, with those triangles, at the moment that there is a repetition, at the moment that there is a time base, at the moment that there is inertia, there is mass. And once you have mass, then you can add energy to mass and you can actually create materials. And he describes the whole row of that.
Wow.
So essentially he starts with basically an energy vector, but he already connects that to the triangle. In my perspective, you could use the energy vector as a line by itself. But then he sees that you can only see that energy once you can see it, because it repeats itself. And so his starting point is logically you need to have a triangle, and then once it starts to repeat itself, once you have a time base, you can see that how time structures create space structures.
Okay.
And that then forms, in his description, the manifestation of the universe. And if you look in our body, you can see that in that same way, our cells create a materialization of their living being. In the same way that the snail would build a house as the snail house. So the skeleton is not part of our body, but it is a product of the living cells. The materials of the cells are not a part of the body, but they are a product of the first cell dividing. And so in my description of freedom of choice, I realize that yes, we do have the physicality of the body. And we can see that at the cadaver, at the moment that somebody has just died. But if we look a bit later, we see that that body starts to collapse. It just falls apart. So we shouldn't look at that physicality of the body, but we should look at the software instead. And so that's where I started to look already during my medical school years. For the connection point, how in our body do we operate changes? not just that we can sing and dance with the body, jump up and down, do the whole song and dance, but also that in the body it is possible for the body to repeat itself and remain healthy, or it repeats itself with an error in it, which we call a disease. But then, of course, if the body, which is produced by cells, goes sick and gets a deformation built in, then that means that the software has cracked. The software was broken before. So I need to be able to describe what happens at that level of the software. And people like Bert Verveen and Bjorn Nordenstrom have shown that the software, these electromagnetic circulations in the body, are in fact part of the cell communication, and health is defined by the integrity of that circulation. So at that level, I still cannot understand the origin of diseases. Why is it healthy first, and why is it sick after? If you look at a more simple level, there is one cell first, and then there are two cells, but they are different. One of them still works and one doesn't. What happened in between? So that's why I got to look into the dynamic of cell division. At first, there was this notion, Bert Verveen is really clear on that, and Hans Selye, another physiologist, added the other part of that story. Bert Verveen says the circulation between the cells is the basis of health. And Hans Selye showed that cells can internally change how they function based on how externally they are part of that feed-forward feedback loop. So Hans Selye showed that our regulatory system is based on cells changing their internal state. And the example which he gave was that of the inflammatory and anti-inflammatory molecules in our body. So the fever making and then the fever breaking molecules in the body. And they turned out to be two groups of molecules of the adrenals. One, the glucocorticosteroids, which are glucose, like plant-like, so the sugar-based, and they create the inflammation. Basically, they dissolve the membranes in the body. And the other is the mineralocorticosteroids, like mineral. So basically, you see the juxtaposition between plants and minerals. And the cells can use that to dissolve the membranes in the body. Basically, you call that fever. But they can also do that the other way around and reduce the dissolution of the membranes in the body. So you call that the fever inhibition. In other words, the cells are able to reset the body, which means that the cells can change the body to work differently by the cell's intent. And so in that sense, you can really appreciate that the human body is not alive, but that it is like a hardware or the motherboard of a computer. With the difference that in a living being, the cells are always busy to remodel the motherboard. Where in a house, you flip the switch, the light bulb goes on and it burns out. You have to change the light bulb, with all the jokes about that. Then in the body, you can see that the cell will work on changing the body materials all the time. Most explicitly seen in the bones of the body, where there are cells who are building bones, but also cells breaking it down again. So you see that the continuation of the body is like a building up and a breaking down. And that basis I called separately to generate, to build up, to operate or to organize. And the third level is to break it down. to destroy. So if you look at that principle, then you can see that all the cells in the body are able to operate the principle of generate, operate, destroy, G-O-D.
Yes. But
the only way that you have health going on is if that is a cycle, which essentially you find in the fourfold cycle called the cell cycle. So you have four elements: integrate, generate, operate, destroy, or in other words, I God. So the cells do that with the making of bones and breaking them down again. They do that in the making of the connective tissues and the breaking down of it. They do it in the making of the organs and the whole body and the breaking down of it, but they also do it in the building of the cells and breaking down of it. So for example, if the cells are over activated, the cells themselves go into a fever state. Basically, it's like the light bulb burning out. And those are diseases, fever-like diseases such as AIDS. But you also have the opposites, that there are diseases which are based on the reduction of the energy flow in the system. And basically, it peters out, it slows down, it fossilizes, it freezes. Which is what you find in diseases like cancer. They harden. It's like a scar tissue forming. There is no intelligence in that system anymore. So you see that on the one hand, the information level goes up too much, and the other level, it goes down too much, and life is about keeping the balance in between. And in fact, the alchemist already called that the difference of dissoluo and coagulo. To dissoluo, to dissolve, and coagulo, to coagulate, has basically the same fever and anti-fever state described by Hans Selye as part of this preservation of this integration of cell communication by which the cells form the health in the body. Coming back to that realization that sometimes that goes wrong. The one cell does something which is part of the whole, and the other cell does something which is no longer part of the whole. So basically, you can see that there's a kind of information gap, a rift between the two cells. And cancer is an example of that. Cancer will only originate if the cells are living in an environment which are too acidic, there's too many free electrons, as a result of which their cell synchronization communication gets lost in noise. But in cancer, it also takes place when in the body there is a situation of ongoing stress, which, as Björn Nordenström showed, basically is another level of electrical activity. It is also being described by Hans Selye. That's actually where the word stress was introduced into the medical jargon, that all of the cells are in a chaotic form of communication, trying to get things sorted out, because there is something going on in the body which the body doesn't recognize, doesn't know how to deal with. So it is in a feverish-like communication, and as a result of which the meaningful communication between the cells can get lost at that in that pell-mell. And at the and another level, this will happen, that stress in the body will happen when at the at the level of consciousness there is a break of realization. First there is an understanding, okay, this is how it all connects, and then there's an understanding, suddenly we do not know how it connects. Basically, this is what in physics is called the symmetry and the symmetry break, and what in my terminology is, it is the boundary as a separator or the boundary as a connector. But essentially, the boundary should be something turning inside out on itself, just as the universe as a whole. So if in the consciousness there is a rupture in integrity, or a rupture in integration, and at that level they are in equivalent, but then one part no longer connects to the whole. So as a result, say it's called called a biological schizophrenia. So in the consciousness, suddenly there is a split, One part is normal, one part is against normal, anti-normal, let's call it crazy. It is paranormal, it is already doing something which will be coming ahead, so it's not crazy, but very much more sane than the part which considered to itself to be normal. And that would be the case in learning and growing. But if that goes wrong, and the part disconnects from the whole, then you have this spiritual break, which then leads to a break in the regulatory system, with the stress coming into the body, hyperactivity in the communication, creating a chaotic environment, which then leads to a chemical disbalance, which too many free electrons, the acidification of the body, as a result of which the individual cells can no longer get the information which they need to synchronize with the rest of the body. And then the doctors call that cells and do the super thing of trying to kill those cells, because those cells, they are not the problem. They are just the thermometer which shows that the temperature has gotten too hot, that basically the cells start to slowly explode. And what you see in cancer is a slowed down explosion. So the intellectual explosion went to an electromagnetic communication explosion, which went to a chemical explosion, and as it goes, so it slows down. So in the end, you have a group of cells which just keeps on growing and growing and growing, because it cannot get the information how to synchronize with the rest. If you simply deacidify the body, eliminate the electric stress of the body using homeopathy and acupuncture, you discharge the emotional charge in the system, as is described by Rieke Geert Hamer and done by all the psychic spiritual healers, then you'll see that the cancer simply ungrows. So I had to understand this to get to the inside that what I needed to look at was the basis of the integration of information and matter in the cells, and the best place to look for that and the best place to find freedom of choice in a body is in the cell division of the living cell. And that is the basis of the story which I'm now telling to my friend, so that I can put it in this Dutch book on, say, the handbook tutorial on freedom of choice. But before I go into that, I'd rather re-establish a new connection for the recording, that we don't run into the technical, basically the same rupture as I described, and at some point the signal gets lost in the noise of the feedback loops. So I'll come right back to you. One moment, please.
Yeah, good. Let's do that.